everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. I'm always thrilled to be able to share with you such profound conversations with people who really inspire me, and I have another great conversation in store for you today. Before we get there, I just want to remind everyone that this show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make those informed decisions in your life. And to support you in doing that, I invite you to go to my website, which is What Women Must Know, and my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, and either opt in to my newsletter or like me over on my Facebook page, because it's a way that I can continue to share information with you. I also send all the archive shows to both of those places, so you can be sure to listen wherever you are and take every opportunity to really enjoy the wisdom and information from each show. And I also wanted to say that there is a new app that is available, so you can listen to all the programming on Progressive Radio Network, and you need to search and download the Progressive Radio app. So it's the Progressive Radio app. And the other thing that I always like to share, I'm excited about, when I was getting some stats on the show, I was told that this show is in the top 10 of all the programmings on Progressive Radio Network. So that's pretty exciting for me to hear, and I want to thank all my listeners for being so devoted, listening in every week and sharing the information. I've been on this program and on this station and doing this particular show ever since the network began, which I have, it's kind of fading into the mist of time now. I don't know, maybe 12, 14 years. So it's just great to know that all of you are really benefiting from the very special guests that I have each week. And so that is a great way to segue into the very special guests that I have this week. And I'm really thrilled to have as my guest this week, Cheryl Richardson. So many of you may know of Cheryl Richardson, have read many of her books, and I just want to share a little bit about her. She is the number one New York Times bestselling author of several books, including Take Time for Your Life, Life Makeovers, Stand Up for Your Life, The Unmistakable Touch of Grace, The Art of Extreme Self-Care, You Can Create an Exceptional Life with Louise Hay, which she wrote, and her new book, Waking Up in Winter, In Search of What Really Matters at Midlife. Her work has been covered widely in the media, including The Today Show, CBS, This Morning, New York Times, USA Today, Good Housekeeping, and O Magazine. Cheryl was also the team leader for the Lifestyle Makeover series on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she accompanied Miss Winfrey on her Live Your Best Life nationwide tour. You can visit her at CherylRichardson.com and also on her Facebook page, which is Cheryl Richardson. And Cheryl Richardson's spelling is C-H-E-R-Y-L, as opposed to mine, which is S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L. So do the C-H-E-R-Y-L with Cheryl. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Cheryl Richardson to the show. So hello, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
I love interviewing Cheryls. I don't get to do that very often, you know.
I know. It's not a really, really common name, that's for sure.
No, it isn't. So. You know, it's and my spelling is really unique, so it's like I hardly meet anybody. And I went to my yoga studio the other night, and I signed in, and there were like three Cheryls spelled S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L. I've never seen so many Cheryls with that spelling in my whole life. And there they are in my little yoga studio. So who knows?
Well, sounds like you're in the
right place. I don't
know
what it means. Yeah. So Cheryl, it's great having you on the show. You've been so prolific in your work and your writing. I always have great admiration. Yeah, as an author myself, I know what a labor of love it is. So you've just been doing some great things and really, you know, taking on these issues and putting the time in and giving birth to all of these wonderful books. And they all seem to have a similar theme, Cheryl. Or am I reading something else into it? But it seems to be your theme is about embracing yourself, honoring yourself, making the most of who you are, and being able to step into a greater sense of self and purpose and authenticity. Am I on track with this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that personally, from a very young age, I've always been interested in living an examined life. So not that I would have called it that when I was very young, but I think I started journaling when I was 12 years old. And I think that really, I don't think I know, that that really established this wonderful line of communication with myself. So I learned at a very early period in my life that I could, through writing and through writing my own thoughts and feelings and experiences, writing about those, I could just understand myself better, understand the world better, and function better in the world. And so, my whole body of work, I would say generally, is about self-care, self with a capital S, so ultimately really just honoring the soul. And I come at it from different angles, whether it's taking care of your outer life, your inner life, your emotional inner life by building confidence and self-esteem, your spiritual life. I mean, these are the different topics that my books cover, and which is part of why when I published this current book, Waking Up in Winter, I made a decision that I had really written and said all I needed to say about self-care. I mean, aside from coming up with clever new ways to say the same thing, I just, as you said, Cheryl, writing a book is a labor of love, and it's a huge, huge commitment. And when it came time to publish my next book, I thought, you know, I don't have anything new to say. Like, I've done it all. Like, my body of work covers all the bases. And it was pretty scary. I thought, my God, what am I going to do? And it was my husband who said, why don't you just publish one of your journals and show people what it's like to actually live an examined life and to listen to your life and respond to it? And that's exactly what I decided to do this time around.
So who knew that your journal,
I know,
at one point in time, those inner writings and reflections would become part of your next best-selling book. So, you know, you never know where it's going to lead.
From your lips to God's ears, first of all, and you're right. I mean, you know, I remember when I published my very first book, Take Time for Your Life, and I had sent it to an editor, a very experienced editor, a freelance editor, to look at it, to see if I could even write. I had no idea whether I could write, and I was so nervous, you know, waiting for her feedback. And one of the first things she said to me was, congratulations, your journal keeping taught you how to write in a simple and accessible way. And I never in a million years imagined that keeping a journal would actually hone this craft of writing. I mean, now, of course, it makes sense, but back then, I had no idea over the years as I kept with it that it would allow me to really, you know, sort of write in a way that makes you feel like you're sitting with me in a living room and we're having a conversation, because that's the kind of books I like to read as well. You know, I like to feel really engaged with the writer, and I like stories. And I think now more than ever, we need stories in order to grow and evolve, because we're so overwhelmed with information and how to, you know, blogs and websites and social media and all of that, that I think reading about other people's stories can be incredibly comforting and inspiring and helpful. At least I hope so.
Well, stories are, you know, storytelling has always been such an important teaching tool throughout, you know, cultures and generations of teaching, to learning, you know, the lessons. So I agree. I think our stories are very powerful and inspiring for others, as well as reminding ourselves of what we've achieved and accomplished. So I'm just curious, Cheryl, so what did you start out with career-wise? Where did you begin on this journey of yours?
Well, really I would say that the real answer going all the way back was I started out as a tax consultant, believe it or not. And I would actually meet with clients, and this was long before there were even computers. And so when I would prepare people's tax returns, I would learn a lot about the intimate details of their lives and of their businesses. And over time, it became really clear to me that while I was very good with math and very good with accounting and tax preparation, what I really loved about my work was hearing about people's stories. So we go back to stories, right? Mm-hmm. Hearing people's stories, hearing about the challenges that they were facing in their personal lives and in their professional lives, hearing about the questions they had related to the businesses that they were growing, and and some of the even the big wake-up calls that people would experience in their lives. And so I grew up in a family business, and in my mid to late 20s, I decided to leave the family business and go out on my own. And I called myself a business counselor, and I said that I wanted to help people grow their businesses by growing themselves. And it's because I have learned, after dealing with hundreds and hundreds of business owners, that what prevented people from achieving success had a lot less to do with what they were doing in the outer world and more to do with how they weren't growing in their inner world. And I was already very interested in that. I hired my first therapist when I was 19, which, you know, I'm 58 now, so that's a long time ago, and that was a pretty radical thing to do back then. But I wanted to understand myself better, and I wanted to make better choices for my life. And so while I was working as a business counselor, I was introduced to a gentleman by the name of Thomas Leonard, who was from Texas, I believe it was, and he was coaching. He had been a financial planner, and he was coaching people who had already achieved a certain level of success but were unhappy. They wanted more meaning in their lives. And he was coaching them to improve their quality of lives, to really look at what mattered to them. And I loved what he was doing. And he had created a kind of bare bones structure for a coach training program. He called himself a coach, which back then there was no such thing except on sports teams. And the moment I got the information about this course that he was creating, I thought to myself, boy, this man is doing what I'm doing, but he's doing it so much better, and he's got so much information and wisdom that I don't have, and I immediately enrolled in the coach training program. Back then, it was a three-year program. Today, you can, you know, there are some coach training places you can go to on a weekend. It was a three-year training program, and it was really to help deepen my experience and interest in what made myself tick and what made other people tick. And so I began coaching in a more formal way while I was training, and then eventually would build a private practice myself over the phone and via email, which was also unheard of at that time. A lot of my colleagues thought I was out of my mind, and they were all talking about me behind my back, thinking I was, you know, telling people I was crazy to think I could build this business by talking to people on the phone. But it worked really beautifully, because when I spoke with people on the phone, there was a certain amount of self-consciousness that wasn't present because we weren't face-to-face. And so we could get to the truth a lot more quickly. And when you get to the truth, you're able to make changes in your life more quickly. So from my coaching practice came eventually my first book, Take Time for Your Life. And that really captured the process that I took clients through when I was working with them. And then, you know, the rest is history from there. Well, of course, when Take Time for Your Life came out a year and a half later, Oprah Winfrey's show called and asked me if I'd come and do a show about making over one's life, and it went very well, and that ended up turning into a year-long series called the Lifestyle Makeover Series. And that moved me career-wise from working primarily with business owners to now working with the general public and women in particular. And that's where the rest of my books were born. And through that whole, you know, through the whole period, off and on, I would always keep a journal. I mean, it's something I've just always done. And so when it came time to work on this next book, and my husband challenged me to think about publishing a journal, which I was both terrified at the thought of doing that and excited, which to me means it's probably a good indication to move forward. And so I did something really different this time. I didn't sign a publishing contract, and I didn't have a deadline. I decided that I was going to take a journal that I had already written and go through it and edit it for punctuation and grammar and to add some context here and there so the reader would know what the heck I was talking about. And I wouldn't decide whether or not I would publish it until, you know, I was ready. And it took me 2 years of really just going back and forth to decide that, yes, I would take this huge creative risk and potentially career risk and publish a private journal to give people an inside look at what it means to be a writer in the 21st century, a woman at midlife, a teacher, somebody who travels and works with, you know, people all over the world. I was inspired by Mae Sarton. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, Cheryl.
No. No, I haven't.
No, she wrote, yeah, she wrote a book called, you would probably love it. She wrote a book called Journal of a Solitude that was published, I want to say, in the 70s. And it was about a year in the life of a creative woman. It was a private journal of a creative woman. And she was a writer. She wrote fiction, nonfiction, poetry, feminist writer, really. And I found her journal in the mid-80s at a book fair at a church. And I loved being able to read about a writer's life. You know, she would publish, she would go give talks, she talked about getting reviews, negative reviews, the challenges of being a single woman, running a business, having a public life. I mean, it was just fascinating. And she would go on to write a series of journals throughout her life, all the way through 83 when she died. Her last journal was called At 83. And I devoured everyone when they came, you know, as I got a hold of them. And so my husband knew that, and that's why he said to me, you've always loved Mae Sarton. Why don't you just be brave and do what she did, but in the 21st century? And that's how it all, that's sort of my career trajectory.
So you were courageous enough to reveal all.
And a lot.
And you know, but, you know, I mean, when we talk about ourselves, you know, we really express what so many other people are feeling and going through. So that, I think that's why it's so powerful when we share ourselves and share our journeys. So Cheryl, what are some of the most important or profound things that you have been exploring within yourself that is also relevant for where so many of us are at this moment in time?
Well, I decided, the reason I chose the journal that I did to publish was because a couple of things. When I turned 50, it was a really significant birthday for me, as I think it is for a lot of people. And, you know, I had that very, on the day that I turned 50, I've always enjoyed birthdays. I feel like every year my life gets better and better, so I've never been one to dread a birthday. And so I wasn't dreading 50. But on that day, I was really surprised at how profoundly struck I was by the fact that I had a lot more years behind me than ahead of me. And I really sort of dove into that reality. And so turning 50 was significant. I also lost a dear friend who was a colleague of mine, a little bit older than I was, but her name was Debbie Ford, and she had published several books, and we traveled sometimes together speaking at the same events. And so I think I was 53 or 54 when Debbie died, 53. And, you know, when I saw her a couple of days before she passed, I was at her deathbed, and along with saying to me, you know, please, Cheryl, take more vacations. I mean, she said some very profound things. She said to me, Cheryl, you know, where I'm at right now, how many best-selling books I have doesn't matter to me. How many fans on Facebook I have isn't that important. You know, all that matters to me right now is my son, what's going to happen to my son when I leave, the people I love, and where I'm going. I have no idea where I'm going from here. I mean, she certainly had some ideas, but she said to me, you know, please, please take more vacations, which didn't surprise me. But then she said, stop doing things that bore you. And I thought, what an unusual thing to say. Like, I just never expected that. And so I was being given an opportunity to sit at my own deathbed in a lot of ways because we had such a similar life. And I walked away from that conversation, of course, in a lot of pain, pretty gutted from it, you know, just deeply saddened by the loss of her. But that really set they were wake-up calls, like really helpful wake-up calls. And, you know, what it did is it set me on a path as a midlife woman to really begin examining, and this is really where I'm at, beginning to examine how I was living my life, the choices I was making, the relationships that I were in, that I were engaged in, including my marriage, the work that I was doing. And, you know, everything was up for grabs. And you know, it wasn't so much a conscious decision that, oh, yes, I'm going to start to reimagine my life now. It was more like, holy mackerel, you know, time is precious here, and I don't know how much of it I have left. And I want to, A, make sure I take good care of myself so I can live a vital, fully alive life, and B, I want to make sure that I'm spending my time and energy on what matters most. And so I just began to, you know, this, the writing that unfolded from that was the process of reexamining my life, reexamining the choices I was making, and also reexamining, and I think this is important, Cheryl, because as we grow and as we reach midlife, there's certain things that happen. I don't know how old you are. I don't know where you are in your life, but, you know, my suck it up muscles were going slack. I just couldn't suck it up anymore. And every now and then I'd lose a filter or two, and suddenly, you know, I would just say how I felt and what I wanted and what I needed without worrying about, you know, hurting somebody else's feelings. Not that I was rude, it's just not who I am, but I would just speak up more and find a stronger voice. And I really did take to heart what Debbie said when she said, stop doing things that bore you. Started to really look at, you know, what conversations bored me, what elements, what parts of my work bored me, my personal life, just how I was living it, what was boring, what was just, where was I going through the motions? I wanted to stop doing that. And so that's a process that continues to unfold for me in my daily life. Also dismantling the identity, you know, we can't grow and evolve and remain the same people. We can't stay in the same roles. The roles have to grow and evolve as well in order for us to continue to feel alive and vital. And so that's important to me. I'm always looking at just sort of examining through the lens of what Debbie said. You know, am I really engaged here? Am I really interested in this conversation, this activity? Am I fully present for my relationships and all relationships, not just with people, but with pets and nature and myself? And these are all the kinds of bigger questions that I live with now on a daily basis.
And those are really good questions, because I think when we have anyone around us who dies, transitions, it's always that thought of, well, it could, you know, how precious life is, because we don't know what will happen in the next moment. And it's like a chance to wake up to those very deep questions that you raised in your own life, in your journal. It's like, how can you make the most of your life? Are you living out of a routine that is not bringing you the passion? One of the things that always struck me when I was doing some research is the fact that our brain has this infinite capacity to expand. We can make new connections, we can create new brain cells as long as we are experiencing new things. Whenever we reach a place of mastery, whatever that is, you know, that which is where people like to be, in that mastery place, because we're so comfortable having achieved all the skills, but when we arrive at that place of mastery, we no longer are building new brain cells, new brain connections, new neuronets. It's like the brain says it's boring. I have not, you know, I've been there, done that, which is always an inspiration to keep on doing things differently. Always learn, step out.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, I know that's true. That one of the things that happened to me when I was really reexamining my work, I remember having a conversation with a colleague of mine, and I was talking about how, on one hand, I felt incredibly blessed to do the work I was doing. I was writing books, I was traveling around the world, I was giving speeches to thousands of people, doing television. I mean, you know, a lot of people look at a life like that and think, a lot of people want that kind of life. And I'd been doing it for a long time. And when I was reexamining even that, like what aspects of that did I no longer want to do, somebody said to me exactly what you said, Cheryl. He said to me, you know, Cheryl, at some point when you've done something long enough and you've mastered it, and it's time to move on to something else. Like, otherwise it's going to get boring. It doesn't matter how exciting it used to be or how exciting it might be to others. Once you know what you're doing, you know, the only way that you keep yourself vital and alive is by doing something else. And that combined with brain science, which is something that's very important to me. I mean, you're right. It's so important. You know, the brain is like command central, and we want to be both building new neural networks and, what would I say, you know, releasing or avoiding old neural networks. I can't think of the right word, but,
shedding.
You know, we want
shedding.
To... Shedding. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. We want to be shedding the old neural networks that no longer serve us. And so, you know, the brain is what is command central for the body. And I'm very, very much aware on a daily basis that if I keep doing the same thing with the body, let's say, if I have the same routine, if I, you know, get up and eat the same thing for breakfast, shower the same way, you know, have the same sort of routines every single morning, I'm just reinforcing the existing neural networks that may or may not be serving me. And so most people, when you get them quiet enough and present enough, most people will tell you that they would like more aliveness in their life. They'd like to feel more engaged and alive in life. And that really does come from doing new activities, forming new neural networks, and shedding the old ones that no longer serve us. And by the way, also turn on and off genes that could either really support the health of the body or diminish the health of the body. So I think that that's really important. And I think also journaling is a great way to notice. Like I could see when I went back through, one of the most fascinating things for me about publishing this journal was I had to go back several times because, as you know, Cheryl, when you write a book, you go through the editing process, then somebody else edits it, and then you've got to proof it. And then it gets edited again, and then you proof it. And, you know, even sometimes just the littlest things, but you have to keep reading it over and over again. And what I could see very clearly was the result of old neural programming that was no longer working for me and what clearly needed to change. And that meant I had to move my body in new ways, move my brain in new ways, think new thoughts very consciously. And in doing so, suddenly a very different and new life emerges. So it's very, and of course, and then we all, you know, we know from the research that's been done about the importance of just staying active, mentally active, and learning and challenging ourselves, you know, just how vital that is for the body as well, well, for the whole being, really.
So interesting. It's like by writing this book and having to go over and proof it, it's like you got to really, you got to have a really intimate relationship with your old self.
Yes, yes. And a really loving one. You know, it's funny, ever since I've published this book, it hasn't been out very long, but the people who have read it have, there's been a lot of questions that come up about journaling. And I'm reminded, a lot of people will say to me, well, I used to journal, but then I'd go back and read it and think, oh my God, I'm a mess. Like, this is crazy. And it was such for me, being at midlife and having a lot of my own personal growth under my belt, I could go back and reread this journal with such compassionate eyes, you know, because, of course, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and I was able to see, oh, gosh, I was so worried about this, and there was no need for that, or, now I see what was happening in that relationship, or now I see where my marriage was headed and how I sort of, by re-engaging in my marriage with my husband, saved myself from some potential pretty harmful consequences. And here's where I wasn't walking my talk, and I wanted to walk my talk. And so, but being able to see those things with compassionate eyes was really important. And I do think that that's something that comes with age and wisdom. You realize that, you know, if beating ourselves up worked, we'd all be thin, rich, and happy. And it just doesn't, this doesn't work that way. So,
In your exploration, what you've been doing for most of your life, what do you think happens energetically? How are we different during this time of midlife, which say it's like 50 onwards, I guess, would be the definition. It's like, you know, in the greater cycles of our growth, of our spiritual growth, of our emotional growth, there are cycles of learning, and there are cycles of awareness, and there are cycles of experience. What in your experience of your work and being reflective, what What do you think are the lessons, the gifts that come with this stage of one's life's journey?
Well, I think if you embrace this stage, if we can embrace it for the wonderful opportunity it is, I think we discover a few things. You know, there's different stages in life. I think about the Hindus, or, you know, in India they talk about the four ashramas. The first stage of life is the learning stage, right? The student phase, where we're all students and we're going to school and we're getting educated and we're learning the ways of the world and, you know, being prepared for adulthood. And then the next stage is the householder stage, where we're having families and building a career or building a business, achieving success. Ambition is really important at this stage to some people. Building a home and a family is important to some, and we go through, you know, our 30s and our 40s, for a lot of us, particularly women, worshiping at the altar of efficiency and, you know, achievement and all of that. And then when we get to the 50s, it's the third stage. And originally, you know, it's considered the retirement stage, but that's really changing. I mean, I'm 58 and I don't have any plans of retiring. And I'm not, you know, I'm not even thinking about it. I mean, I'm thinking about it down the line, maybe, or just, you know, planning much further out than the generation before me did and the generation before that. So there is this stage, though, and in the book I call it the autumn. What I decided to really see it was as the autumn time of life. And it's not a time that we really talk about enough and celebrate enough. And in this time of life, I think it's important that we start to slow down a bit and at least turn around and look back at the past and cull the lessons learned, the wisdom gained, the experiences that were meaningful, the experiences that maybe are still calling to be healed. But it's really a time of reevaluation and reconsideration of the life that we've lived thus far. And in this stage of life, we are really invited to begin to pay attention to how we use our energy. And you mentioned energy. You know, I see life as energy. I'm much more actually interested in energy than I am time. We start to really pay attention to the fact that we may not have as much energy as we used to for the things that do bore us or don't interest us enough. You know, and as we get older, the fourth stage would really be the stage of where we prepare for our own death. I mean, we consciously prepare. We cultivate more of a deeper inner life and a relationship with a power greater than us, however we define that. But we prepare to consciously and in a meaningful way end our life, you know, come to the completion of our life and to feel good about that process. So the autumn stage, you know, as we get older, we naturally do start to lose some energy and some ability to, you know, I'm not running around like I was 25. I'm in great shape. I mean, I'm strong and I engage in activities that keep me strong. But I also have to recognize that my energy is precious and I've got to be willing to start to cut back on some of the things I do, even if I really want to do them, because there are other priorities that call for my attention, like cultivating an inner life, like cultivating maybe a spiritual practice. In other words, I might want to have less social engagements, but fewer social engagements that are deeper and more meaningful, more alone time, more time to oneself. I find women, particularly when we're talking about the midlife phase, we'll talk about wanting more space in their lives, more space in their calendar, wanting to be less committed to appointments and dates and responsibilities. I think that's a really important part of this stage of life, is really beginning to look at, okay, who am I now? Where did I come from? What do I want to carry forward with me? And what do I want to leave behind? And also, there's one point in the journal where I say, I'm talking about this change that's happening and how unsettling it is, because who will I be if I'm not CEO woman making things happen? And I realize at one point that I'm making the shift from the gladiator to the chalice. And what I mean by that is this sort of hyper-masculine way of, you know, going out and fighting the battle and making things happen, to a more receptive, present, quieter place where I allow what's next to find me. And it does when you're willing to do that, when you're willing to cultivate that kind of presence. It's a more feminine, it's bringing more of the feminine back to one's life, and that's true for men or women.
That's so interesting as you're talking. I can really relate, because there was a time when I would, you know, set my goals for each year and what I want to accomplish and just, yeah, you know, do all of that structured preparation. And lately in my life, I don't have any specific goals for 2018. I don't know what empire I want to build this year. But what's happening, Cheryl, is that, all, you know, you're just what you're saying, being receptive. I mean, my calendar is getting so booked up through May and beyond with opportunities and events and things that I haven't even known they existed, you know. And yes, it's just that the path is unfolding and the new explorations are unfolding, but they're, you know, they're being drawn to me. I don't have to go out and make them happen. And that takes a certain amount of trust, I would say, in,
yes,
order to not have to force things, right? You know, not have
go ahead, finish your thought.
You, I was going to say, you know, pounding the beat, and which I,
yes,
think so many of us have done to build a career. You pound the beat, you go out, you network, you're, you know, taking the next course, you're just enrolling in this, and I mean, you're building something, which is fine. That was a stage, but I do find, as someone who's self-employed, so maybe that's a little different than someone who's in a job, but that has certain demands. But as someone who's self-employed, like you are, I mean, I'm just trusting, and, you know, because I really didn't know what I wanted my 2018 to be anyway. So
mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I've got a lot of things. I just had a book published. I mean, there are things happening, but I'm just allowing it. I'm not structuring mm-hmm. it or setting a definite course, you know, that's structured.
And you know, that, and I think that does happen particularly for women who have been kind of gladiator-like, right, just making things happen. And I used to be that woman who would set goals, create an action plan. I was masterful at manifesting what I wanted, really good at it. Then at some point, it stopped working, and I thought, my goodness, what's wrong? What am I not doing right? Maybe I have to set, you know, more specific goals, you know, more craft better action plans. And in some ways, both before this journal and during this journal, I'm coming to terms with the fact that that old way of being, like I said, that hyper-masculine, action-oriented way of being wasn't going to serve me anymore, and that I did have to trust. And that's trust with a capital T, because, you know, the mechanisms that we've used to achieve the success in our life are tried and true, and they're really become part of our identity. And when we let them go, it can feel incredibly uncomfortable and scary. I mean, I think there's one entry in the journal where I talk about feeling like I've been possessed by a bratty teenager who just won't let me, you know, go in and make my office organized and answer all of my email and, like, do all of the tasks that I had been doing all my life. Suddenly there's this inner brat going, no, you're going to play. You're going to take time for yourself. You're going to risk pissing people off by not getting back to them right away. You're going to start creating more space and allowing your soul to experience life instead of conquering it. And what I found is exactly what you said, Cheryl, that after a period of time, a brave period of really waiting, sitting in limbo, life started to bring me opportunities that I never could have imagined for myself. Like, I just wouldn't have thought of it. And suddenly these opportunities would come my way that would take me in very different directions in my life. And they weren't boring. They were very interesting and stimulating and engaging and challenging. And I think we all, and particularly at midlife, we need to be schooled in how to be patient, how to wait more, how to sit with space in our calendars, and also how to say no to good opportunities so that you have the space for great opportunities to come your way. And that takes a lot of trust and a lot of courage to be able to do that. But I'm telling you, it's so worth it.
So, you know, as we're having this conversation, a couple of things come to mind, because it sounds like when you describe these new choices, these new perceptions, these new behaviors, what you're really moving into, and I do think you talked about when you said you were becoming the chalice, is experiencing life from a feminine energy perspective. You know, embodying more of the feminine rather than the masculine, which we have been programmed with in our culture to go and do and achieve and get out there. And I just see, you know, in the work I've done with women over the years, how we just kind of exhaust ourselves, really, by trying to do and be for everyone rather than ourselves. And that's part of the programming of the wounded feminine, as I call it. And, you know, everything you're describing is really about honoring and embodying that feminine energy into the world and learning how to live in a way that we are really aligned more with who we are and also the energy that's being brought into this dimension now. We are moving more into the time of the feminine and embodying those qualities and experiences and perceptions that are part of this energy, feminine energy, which doesn't mean woman for men listening. It's an energy that's more receptive and more honoring of cycles rather than time restrictions and listening and just listening to our inner self.
Yeah, well, we have been living in a patriarchal system for millennia, really, and it's a system that hurts both men and women. And it is a system that honors the thinking mind, accomplishment, movement, action, competition. And we're seeing that now more than ever, front and center, you know, what a patriarchal system will do to people. And we need more listening, like you said, collaboration. We need to be more connected to our feeling state. The mind is helpful and important. Critical thinking is a very, very important skill. We also need to be connected to the heart, and we need to honor the fact that our emotions give us vital information about what's working and what isn't working in our lives. And we need to be able to honor things like patience and waiting and receptivity and softness and compassion. And those are a lot of the qualities that will serve both men and women. They serve relationships, and ultimately, existence is really about relationships. It's about the relationship we have with ourselves, which is vitally important, and then the relationship we have with others, because we are all on this planet together, and we need each other. And so there has to be a balance of the masculine and the feminine, and as long as it's out of balance, we're going to continue to see, excuse me, an escalation of wars and violence and the polarity that we see between parties and black and white thinking and all of that. And we need more of that sort of collaborative coming together of humanity so that we can protect ourselves, protect the planet, protect all beings. So this kind of work, this checking under the hood, this commitment to our own personal growth, the desire to live an examined life and to the willingness to cultivate the trust and the faith that if I stop and take a deep breath and, you know, tend to my inner life, this kind of individual work that we do ultimately is some of the most powerful. It's really such a powerful contribution that we make to humanity in general.
So it's about helping change cultural constructs, changing our perceptions. I remember when I was researching the work with women's health that I did many years ago, one of the things that I discovered that really inspired me was what happens at menopause. I've heard so many women say, you know, when you start going through that stage of life, which is about in the 50s, it's like, oh my God, it's like the beginning of the end, right? It's like your party time is over, your good times are ending. And what I learned were some things that totally inspired me. For instance, that at menopause, the corpus callosum, this part of our brain that separates the right and left hemispheres, actually gets bigger. We have access to more of our right brain, left brain. We can be more intuitive. We can have more logical thinking. We can be more creative. It all expands. We have more access to it, which adds up to, you know, in the end, more wisdom. And that this is not a decline, but actually it's a further expansion of the potential and possibilities that we are, that can only happen at this time of our life. So I loved that information. I love that information because when we talk about midlife, we have to first understand that it is not we're not on a decline when you get in your 50s, 60s, 70s. It is a further upward journey into taking all of our life experiences, distilling it into greater wisdom. And if we look after our health, the sooner the better, if we look after our health, we then have the vitality as well as that experience and wisdom to take us into the future. And that's really, you know, we need to heal the beliefs, because when you watch television, all you see are sales for diapers for adults and for knee surgeries, and then all the lawyers who are doing class action suits for the consequences from all the medications that you were just told you needed for your arthritis. Boy, that's programming, and we need to step back.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, there's another example of, I think at midlife we have to really be very, very discriminating about what we put into our eyes and our ears. And I know I am. I pick and choose the news that I watch, and I don't. I am very conscious of the programming that we take in, often unconsciously, that influences the functioning of the body and the functioning of our thinking. And so, you're right. You know, this is a time, and for women in particular, it's a time to cultivate the wisdom and to really become the elder with a capital E. I think being an elder is sexy. I think it's sensuous. I think it's smart, and it will serve the planet for sure.
Well, I'll drink to that one, you know. You know, I mean, one of my little favorite taglines these days is about getting younger and healthier as you get older. You know, and really holding those kinds of thoughts. And yes, you have to be very careful what diet of propaganda you're letting in through the news and the newspapers and even the movies. We have to be vigilant, because I was just listening to some information about mirror neurons. So I'm sure you know about mirror neurons, right?
Yes,
part of our brain
that
you know, that is learning from what we observe around us. So someone else could be learning something. I mean, I'm taking some dance lessons, and I'm remembering those motor neurons as I'm watching other really good dancers, you know, do their ballroom dancing steps, and I'm watching it because it's like, well, that's how I'm getting my motor neurons to take on that information so they can learn how to do that. But, you know, we can learn from what's around us, but we have to be so discerning, because if we're watching violence, then we are taking on and mirroring that information into our being. And we're not even aware of how we're programming ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. I remember there was a study years ago, Marion Woodman, who's a Jungian analyst, I was taking a workshop with her, and she talked about a study where they took two groups of people, and they showed them, they showed one group 1 hour of the movie The Omen, and this was the first movie of The Omen that was considered a horror movie, but it was nothing like the second one. And then, and what they did is they measured their, you know, galvanic skin response, immune system, immune function, stress hormone level, and like they discovered that over the next 30 days after watching just 1 hour of the movie The Omen, their immune systems were suppressed for 30 days. And yet when they tested people who were listening to classical music and watching serene images, their immune systems actually were you know, increased, were boosted over a 30-day period. And I just never forgot that. I mean, that to me, and of course now, nowadays, there's plenty of research that validates that what we take in our eyes and ears influences our body. I mean, Bruce Lipton's whole body of work around epigenetics tells us that the environment in which we live and operate and breathe and have our being is directly turning on genes and turning off genes. So it's really good self-care is monitoring things like that. And at midlife, you get to be really, really choosy, and that's a good thing.
Okay, so in the few minutes we have left, can you share a couple of tips you may have for midlife lessons or midlife strategies that you want to share with my audience, some practical things?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I did in Waking Up in Winter at the end of the book was include a list of really thought-provoking questions. And I think just beginning to just explore your what's working and what isn't working in your life in a journal is a really great activity. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to worry about doing it every single day, and you don't have to write pages and pages. You can just simply make a list. Here's three things that are working in my life. Here's three things that aren't working in my life. Keeping a journal, I just think some form of a journal, like every night on Instagram, I list five things I'm grateful for, and I invite my followers to do the same. And all these people include their gratitude lists. And as I read through them, as I do every single night, I'm reminded of the things that I'm grateful for. And I think that that's a really great practice. And I do want to say that my Instagram username is Coach on Call because Cheryl Richardson was taken. So I think we can cultivate gratitude also as a reminder to a reminder of what really matters to us at this stage of life. The other thing I did was, as a journalist for a year, I kept a list. Every night I made a list of 10 things that brought me pleasure that day. And they could be very little things, sitting in the garden, watching a hummingbird, eating a piece of chocolate, taking a hot bath, you know, holding hands with my husband as we walked to dinner. And what that did is it reconnected me with pleasure, the importance of pleasure, and it helped me to remember the things that brought me pleasure so that I'd bring more of those into my daily life. So those are some of the things I'd recommend, just as little starting points, little activities.
Yeah, those are great tips. I think having some discipline, whether you start the day or end the day with gratitude, is such an important thing to be doing. It determines our perception of how we live our life on a daily basis, and it's simple to do, but has huge ramifications. So, you know, that's just a great idea that you've been sharing with us. And, you know, I just encourage, you know, people who are listening to, I challenge people who are listening today, you know, what are you doing to put your focus on living a life where you have more gratitude, more appreciation? Or maybe think about something new you can do and bring into your life that would be a sense and a source of joy. So if you're not living a fully joyful a life that's bringing you this sense of passion every day, what are you going to do about it? Right? You know, what are you going to do about it? Right, Cheryl? It's like, okay, we're having this conversation. It's obvious that we're talking about the importance of taking responsibility to bring your light back into yourself, ignite it, and into the world if it isn't already. So, you know, here's a good way to go. Start by reading Cheryl's book, Waking Up in Winter, In Search of What Really Matters at Midlife. We've been talking with Cheryl Richardson today, and I invite you to go to our website, Cheryl Richardson, and that's a C-H-E-R-Y-L, Cheryl. And her Facebook page is Cheryl Richardson, but if you want to visit her on Twitter or on Instagram and see her five gratitudes every night, then go to Coach on Call. So you can experience all the wonderful wisdom and work that Cheryl is doing in all those different vehicles. And, you know, I just appreciate everything you've been doing and the courage to share your inner life, inner process with us in your latest book. And You're such an inspiration. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. I'm so glad to be with you. I appreciate you inviting me.
It's been a pleasure. And to all of you listening, it's a pleasure to have you be with me today. And as always, I want to remind you to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. And until next time, bye for now.